Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is July 14th, 2004. Today's session number is BRD 2004-03. The lesson for today is God's Church, My Vocation, Discernment, Support, and Blessings, Hammers and Healthcare, Professional Vocations, with Dave Brower-Rieke. Let's listen in.
Discernment, support, and blessing. And the endeavor over the next 2 weeks as we come in and out of this discussion is to talk about what our vocations are. We'll define that word in a moment. What our vocations are as Christian people and how our congregations, I think is where I'd like to focus, especially today, how our congregations can support and nurture its members, us, in the vocations and the places that we're called to do God's work. So yesterday was introductory session. We just sort of talked around the issue and some things. And today I'm going to put you to work because I know you're going to fall asleep from that second brownie if I don't. Let me talk to you for 5 or 10 minutes, and then we will do some thinking together. Lutherans are attached to the notion of vocation, because it's one of the things that Martin Luther in the Reformation, the 16th century Protestant Reformation, talked about a lot. Luther wrote a lot, he preached a lot, and this notion of vocation, either by name or by inference, is a significant part of what he has to say and what he's about. You may tie into that through the notion of the priesthood of all believers. Luther was very, very clear that, in his opinion, all Christians, not just clergy, all Christians have a vital part, a vitally important part of the ministry of God in the world, and that together the church is all these folks who are only differentiated by what he called our office or our station, not by whether or not we're serving in the church or outside of the church. We are all the church. So the word vocation or vocatio is a Latin word that he used. Luther, of course, as a priest in the church, was converse in Greek and Hebrew from the Old Testament and the New Testament, also the Latin, which was the Catholic Bible, the Vulgate, which had long standing. And as you probably know, he did translation of the Bible from those three sources into language that common people could read, because they are the church and they need to read the gospel to be about their vocations. So, vocation. The best word probably for us is the word calling. If you look in the Latin Vulgate, the vocation, what's vocation in the Latin is usually calling in the English. So, for example, just by way of getting a bead on the on the word, Isaiah 43:1, Isaiah says, "But now thus says the Lord, who created you, Jacob, the one who formed you, Israel, do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name, you are mine." Called you by name in the English, in Latin, is I have vocationed you. I have given you vocation. I have brought you into the functional, relational reality of the kingdom. It's a very interesting word, but calling is what it might be for the English. Or again, just an example from the New Testament. The word of interest in the Greek is klesis, and he's calling in English, but it's translated vocation in the Latin. 1 Thessalonians 2:12, Paul says to us, "Lead a life worthy of God, who calls you into his kingdom and glory, who vocations you," again, that same sense. It's a word of relationship. It's a word of purpose, and it's a word of action. So that's what we're talking about, okay? Our vocations. One point of clarity that I want to add as we think about vocation this week, relative to our Holden theme of summon out what I shall be. Huh? Summon out what I shall be. In our world of mobility, opportunity, all the great graces that we have, we tend to think, and I'm stuck in this point because I've got 2 kids either in college or ready to go to college. Of course, the question is, what am I going to do with my life, right? We tend to think of vocation as something we need to go find. You know, what does God want me to do? Where does God want me to be? In Luther's sense, preaching in a world that was not so mobile, by a long shot, not full of opportunity. Vocation was where you were at. And Luther's concern was not that you need to go find your vocation. Luther's concern was, don't you realize that where you're at is exactly where God calls you to? So if you're stuck flipping burgers at McDonald's, praise be to God, because you are as important as the Pope. And the preacher to believer says that in that spot, you are doing God's work as much as. And he would say things like this. He would say, a simple washerwoman changing a diaper does a more holy work than all the priests, bishops, and popes throughout history. It's very serious about your calling, my calling. So that's the sense of vocation. For lack of a better definition, I just wrote one up here, so we got something to work with. This is just me, so you can change it if you want, but I'm describing vocation this way, as one's calling, station, and that's an old word, station or, you know, place of being, one's calling, station, or major life pursuit, through which God graces, creates, sustains the world. All right? Your vocation is your calling, station, or major life pursuit, through which God is working in you to create, grace, and sustain the world. So what are vocations? Mother, father, husband, wife, aunt, uncle. You know, those things, those relational things are our vocations. I'm a father. I don't get to choose not to be a father. That's my vocation. I either fulfill it or I don't. Okay? I'm also a pastor. That's a vocation. That's also a vocation of mine. I can change that one if I want to, in good conscience. Okay. But as long as I'm a pastor, by golly, I better be attending to pastoral duties. No fair being a pastor saying, oh, poor me, I don't want to do this. I think I'll take 3 days off in a row just because I'm tired of it. It's not responsible. Okay. So, vocation. Is that okay? Does that work? The definition? All right, just for fun, just to get started. We did this yesterday too, but will you just, some of you just volunteer your name and in a word or two what you would consider your vocation? Don't be shy.
My name is Dorothy, and I think my vocation is a facilitator or a networker.
Dorothy, I'll put networker. Which raises an interesting question. Because you're not using a word that I'm familiar with, that's a job, where you can go out and get a job. My question is, who defines vocation? Mm-hmm. Who defines? Dorothy says, I want to define my vocation. That's between me and God, huh? I want you to think about that with me this week, because you may not be here next week, but for those who are here next week, it's going to be a real dicey question. Okay? When we ask the question, is there such a thing as a same-gender spousal vocation? Who gets to define whether there is or not? Okay, Dorothy, you're a networker. Great, somebody else.
Jesse? Researcher.
Jesse, what do you research, Jesse?
Well, I just graduated with a biology degree.
Researcher. Biologist. Thank you.
Allison Crowell, conductor.
Allison. Is that right?
Sure.
Director, choral director, wonderful. Vocation of music.
Sally, the piano teacher.
Sally, piano teacher. Sally, what's involved in your vocation?
I'm Jenny, I'm a student, mostly. Teacher and researcher and
many things. Now we have a student, you said.
But student first and foremost.
Let me ask my question of Sally, then I'll ask you. Sally, what is God doing through you and your vocation?
Sharing my gift with children.
Okay, and that gift is?
Music.
Okay. Through Sally's vocation, God is teaching music to children. I mean, the question in our vocations is not what we're doing. The question is, what's God doing? How is God creating, sustaining, or nurturing the earth? God's teaching music, joy, bringing song into our hearts. Jenny, what's What's God doing through your vocation as a student?
Well, I'm soon to be 75, and I'm just looking, listening to hear what he wants me to do with the last quarter of my life.
Okay, okay.
And at this point, I'm nurturing grandchildren and children and husband and paying attention to whatever God's telling me.
Okay, so through many vocations, wife, grandmother, God's nurturing the earth, as a student, God is being heard. You're listening, right? God's being heard.
Yes,
God,
yes. Yeah,
is that important?
Because he talks to me all the time, but he hasn't told me what he wants me to do.
Maybe he wants you to listen.
Maybe he wants me to keep doing what I'm doing.
See, again, I mean, we can talk about this in different ways, but the question, one valid question is, what am I supposed to be doing? That's a valid question, you know? The other question is, what's God doing through you right now? Luther's concern was, what's God doing through you right now? I want you to know that and own it and rejoice in it, you know? God's speaking. God's listening. Anybody else? Name, vocation?
Dick, financial associate.
Same question, Dick. What's God doing through you?
Well, it makes it a lot easier because I'm with Thriving Financial, but working with people not only to help them with financial related things and insurance, but also I find myself a lot of times in kind of a nurturing role and just a listening role, listening to people's problems, and we get into a lot of discussions outside into issues with their families and their faith and their church and, you know.
This is very interesting. Do you want your insurance agent counseling you on family affairs? You know, but what you said is, what I think you said was, it's easier for me to live out my Christian vocation through helping people financially because there's a faith tie, a trust tie there, which allows me, I am not like any other financial associate because I'm already identified as a person of faith, and that changes the dynamics, huh? Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Of course. One more, that's just for fun. Seven's a good number.
I'm Karen, and I'm a social worker.
Karen, social worker. Karen, who pays the tab? Who do you work for?
I work for a county government, so I don't have the opportunity to share my faith or work through my faith in my secular job.
Okay, so because you have a secular job and because you work for the government, God's not working through you.
He is, but I can't acknowledge that.
Talk about that with me for a moment. Is God working through Karen?
Yeah.
Yes, certainly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Part of Luther's concern was not just that you not have to all be able to be pastors, but that you understand that God works in the world in different ways and they are all of great value. Don't even care if you're a Christian or not, Karen. As a social worker, out there working the lives of people, you know, God's doing God's work through you. Now, if you're a Christian, you bring something else to that job. You know, doesn't have to be proclamation, but you bring something to that job. But the point is with vocation, see, this is the way that God does the world. Both through Christians and non-Christians. Matter of fact, most of our vocations are not, quote, Christian at all. They're just the way God made the world. If you are a mother, don't you do the same thing whether you're Native American, Muslim, or Christian? Basically, you love your kid, you teach them to walk, you see that they're fed. It could be a bad mother or a good mother, but
everyone's a teacher.
Yeah, everyone's a teacher. Okay, I'm going to read you one quote from Luther, then I'm going to put you to work. Here's the dilemma. Listen closely to what Luther says about vocation, and this is from a sermon he gave on the Sermon on the Mount. He says, love the Word of God and do what is required of you in your station, your vocation. Huh? Love the Word of God and do what is required of you in your station. Then you will experience, both from your neighbor and in your own household, that things will not go as you might wish. You will be hindered and hemmed in on every side, so that you will suffer enough and see enough to make your heart sad. Allison, you're doing choral direction. You want to bring music to kids' lives. You want to form them together in a cohesive unit of harmony. And what do you see?
Happy children.
It works sometimes, doesn't it? You know? But you also see, you know, that kid's so hungry or abused at home, you know, it didn't work. My question for you as we move into our task for the day is it not the case to a certain degree that in our vocations, our common callings, because we are Christian people, that if in fact we accept the Lord's summoning out of us and seek to be Christ for people in our vocations, it is riddled with sadness, frustration, as well as reward, huh? Okay. My question today is, can our church, our worshiping communities, should our worshiping communities be helping us talk about that and supporting us in those locations? Would you like your church to be the presence of Christ in your life, helping you as a director, as a researcher, as a networker, as a student, deal with the frustrations, pains, the ecstasies of your job? Dick? Oh, no, you're thriving. I don't want Dick. Sally, do you think your congregation knows what you do, honors what you do, and understands why it's hard?
You asking me?
No, me. Oh,
well, I thought I didn't think so, but then you were looking this way.
I think so only because I also play for the services at my church, so, okay. So I am a very big
music is something. Jesse, you think your worshiping community understands biology and what you do as a researcher and the sorts of ethical dilemmas that you're facing?
Maybe not.
Would you like them to?
Yes.
Yeah. You ever run into anything under the microscope that you said, I need to talk to somebody about this? Who do you talk to?
Professor, someone smarter.
Someone smarter.
More experience.
That's good. All right, here's our job for today. We are going to, between now and Vespers, create a program for your congregation, a focus for your congregation designed to help you, the members, discern, be supported in your vocations, and be honored for them with your worshiping community, okay? I want a program you can write down, take home with you between now and Vespers. You can implement in your congregation to help you discern your kids, you members, discern and find support for their vocations. That is the ministries of your daily life as biology researcher, choral director, piano, financial associate, okay? What do we need to do that? Where do you want to focus in? Where do you want to start? Just give me a broad category of someplace we should start with that.
Small group.
Who's going to say a small group? Yes? What do you want to have happen in a small group?
It would have to have some initial discussion as to what the object is and how they expect to go about it.
Okay, so one thing we need to do in the congregation, and it can't happen in a small group, but it could happen in other forums, is just some education about what vocation is about, you know, and why that's important for us as Christians.
I was going to say start with awareness that this is even something we can talk about in church, because a lot of people are flabbergasted at that idea.
Is anybody here flabbergasted by the notion that you would not be talking about your daily life and work in the church? Anybody flabbergasted by the notion that you would not be talking about that? But how many of us are already doing it? Now that's not fair. You may be doing it with support people that you know privately in church. You know, family doesn't count. You may have friends who may or may not be church members with whom you debrief the day or the week or the crisis or whatever. But yeah, so number one, we need to educate people. We need to talk about the fact that what does it mean to be the communion of saints? What does it mean? It means to talk about the ministries that God is giving us. You know? Not just how we should go out and be little pastors. That's not the point. You got a pastor. Let her do her job. You go do your job. Why God didn't make us all pastors. Plus, if we're all pastors, no, we'd be growing food. We'd be in a bad way. Right? So yeah, we need to educate. This is a place where we should be talking about that. Right? And also education about what it is we're talking about. The bookstore would love me to push this book because they got a dozen copies at my request. Listen, God is Calling. Wonderful. It's a wonderful little book for a small group or a class. It's accessible. It's only 90 pages. Even I can read it. It just talks simply about what vocation is and what it means in our tradition and why it's important. It's a good place to start. So some education, okay? We can do that. Pastors can preach about that. You can do that in forums. You can do that in small groups, yeah? Okay? And then you'll talk about small groups otherwise. What else do you want to have happen in small groups?
Well, I think once you start that, then you need to be sure that there is communication, that people are open. You have a group of people who are open to discuss their problems and their hopes and their desires and how God is working and all of those sort of things. It all would be probably the first thing. You have to have a group of people who are open and willing to discuss their inner self.
Yeah, let's underscore that.
You might do it.
If we are really going to talk about where the rubber hits the road, where it hurts, where I feel successful and where I don't, if we're really going to talk about that, we're asking for a pretty high level of trust, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Okay. Where are you going to find that high level of trust? You're going to stand up Sunday morning and say, oh, would everybody pray for my failure this week as a, you know? You're probably not going to do that. No, small groups are a wonderful place.
Yeah, usually small groups. We've had a lot of small groups in the congregation I just met. And they have been... they have been small groups, and they've been very open groups, and they have done some of this sort of thing, not specifically this, but I mean, they've been not everyone is open, but they've always had three or four people who are really open, and that has contributed then to the comfort of the people around them to also participate.
And if you have parenting groups in your church, or marriage support groups in your church?
Yes.
It's exactly what we're talking about, except for a broader spectrum of vocation.
You might want to do an anonymous survey to find out how people who are reluctant to talk about it because they don't want to be identified with certain problems or with certain, they don't even, some problems are confidential and they can't break confidentiality out loud, but they can do it anonymously in a survey. Okay. Open-ended questions.
We could use some survey tools just to find out who we are and what we're doing, right? How many of you think you could guess what percentage of the people in your congregation are related to the medical field? I mean, you think you do that, or how many are in the teaching? If you're in a little church, it gets a little easier. Mm-hmm. You know, how many are in professions? How many are in clerical positions? How many are unemployed? You know, do we know each other well enough to do that? A survey might help. Small groups require openness, they require trust levels, they can be done well, but this would be a wonderful place. David?
You also have to have some parameters of what you can do, because in certain professions, you're ethically prescribed about talking about problems. Yeah. The medical profession is one, the legal profession is one, the psychological profession is one, the nursing profession is one, because you have a code of ethics that prohibits you from sharing or revealing anything about
anything that would what?
That would reveal your problem. Because in a small in a church, if you have small groups, and if especially if you're one of those professions and minister to the people of your congregation, it's very easy to ascertain who's suffering that problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So
groups could be focused on learning rather than on sharing confidential information about your work. You know, I mean, like the group could be a learning group, a growing group, rather than a support group.
As a matter of fact, it's probably not going to work to say, we're going to start a small group, eight of us sit around here now, spill your guts.
Right.
It's probably not where we're going to start, but right. So we'll talk about learning and you know, what we're talking about and see where the group goes. I mean, that's the beauty of small groups, right?
colleague of mine had a brown bag lunch small group around the top. The title of it was, "It's Important Work, That's Why I Do It." And so, you know, you got a sense of what your other congregational members were up to. And I think it helped the person who was leading it reflect on why it's important and why I do it. And also gave an opportunity for others, you know, who may be part of that profession to find a mentor. It's one thing Bill Deal says is, you know, you can't always look to your pastor to be able to tell you how to run a small business or something. You know, you need another Christian person who's struggling sometimes with the same thing. But it's important work, that's why I do it. I think that would be one way of kind of getting away from the personal issues.
One side comment, then we'll get back to your main point. You definitely don't want your pastor telling you how to run a business. I mean, that's the whole point of vocation, okay? And your pastor's got no clue. I mean, I shouldn't say that, but your pastor should say, you know, I would love to have you come to Bible class, but if you want to know how to run a business, go talk to them. Okay, but yes, let's talk about what we do. Why my work's important. That doesn't have to be threatening, does it? But terribly affirming.
That would be a great thing to do like not at the church. I mean, at some place at work or at the library or some common.
Go on field trips, everybody. Go on
adventure, visit people, yeah.
There was a curriculum in the old LCA called Connections, I think it was. And it was a new member curriculum based around the catechism. But what it did was, it would take a piece of the catechism and suggest that you have this meeting in somebody's place of work. So you go to the dentist's office and say, okay, what does the seventh commandment have to do with your work? A wonderful idea, I think, to be, how affirming to be, you know, that was your idea, to be where people are actually doing their vocation, or doing their job.
Set up a mentoring system.
A mentoring system. Now, if we're talking about kids, nobody's mentioned youth yet.
Well, grown-ups need mentors too.
Yeah.
Especially women who have suddenly changed their relationship. Divorce, widowhood, whatever, and they are re-entering the workforce. They need a lot of mentoring. Or people who are changing jobs.
Yep.
Didn't find any satisfaction.
Yeah. Who would you?
Whose spouse got transferred, and so they're all of a sudden uprooted.
Who better to help mentor or help walk through that than a sister,
for
brother?
For a whole lot of variety of reasons.
Yeah. Dorothy?
Some ways of encouragement, maybe, you know, highlighting in the newsletter different occupations or vocations. I guess that tends to, it could either be occupations or it could be volunteer type of vocational work. But, you know, it's highlighted a lot of times. I don't think we realize how much is being done by some of the members.
What would you two turn to first in your newsletter? The pastor's page or a page about, did you know Sally does so-and-so?
If they wrote it.
They wrote it, absolutely.
It would be more interesting. Yeah. If they say, this is how I see God at work in my life, or I have been realizing that this is a calling from God.
How wonderful, what a wonderful thing to do. Would you feel affirmed if your pastor or council member or somebody came and said, would you write me a half-page article on what you do and why you think it's important, just so we can get to know you a little better? I mean, who would say no to that? Well, somebody doesn't feel comfortable writing, but I mean, yeah. Roy, you were...
I was a pastor of a large church in Minneapolis that twice a month on a Saturday morning has a 2.5-hour meeting of for unemployed people of all walks of life who find themselves without work. And companies who are in the process of hiring people. And I think he's been doing that for several years now. And it's just such a very helpful, facilitating, networking
project. Can take Dorothy's term.
Yeah, that's Dorothy's term, right.
Are the people who are from the businesses, are they members of the church, or are they just from the community?
I think it's open. Mm-hmm. I think it's an open,
it's a support group that's for unemployed people, and then there are members in the congregation that sometimes the pastor's able to say, I know so-and-so from 3M is looking for...
Are you from there?
I'm from the Twin Cities, so I've heard of it.
Yeah, really? Okay, there you go.
Occasionally there's job connections, but that's really not the focus.
I know I tend, in my church as the pastor, to try to keep things in-house. I don't know why. You know, if we're going to have this meeting between people who are unemployed and job people, let's get our own church people to do this. In a world where we're trying to figure out what evangelism is all about, why don't we go out and say, you know, you're a major employer in town, our church is doing so and such a program, would you come be part of it? You come talk about how you get jobs here, how you apply, how you do an application. You know that, I don't know that. Again, you know how affirming for people. I think so. No shortage of ideas. Dick?
I was just going to comment on theirs because there may be more churches now, but I know 15 years ago when I was laid off from Control Data in the cities, one of the main big churches in Minneapolis or south of Minneapolis had that kind of program, and there were a lot of discussions. They had a huge library of books on all the different kinds of occupations. They had a catalog with people from their church and other churches who volunteered to be a mentor. If you said, gee, I'm thinking about that kind of career, who can I talk to? And they had a list, so those people were willing to be called and offer information.
Let me tell you what I've learned so far, so we can just keep track of this. We start out with education, you know, why vocation is important, what it means for us, what we're talking about at the church. Go back to your catechism. I mean, that's what Luther's talking about, is appreciative of all believers and our being rooted in baptism and called to ministry. That's that conversation. If we just push it beyond the churchy language into the language that makes sense to us and our vocations. We moved away from this, but small groups, are there places where we need to share our heart a little deeper about our vocation than what we're doing? I think that could be an important part for some people. You're talking about... being a servant church to your community, bringing together people without jobs, people who have jobs, whether they be in your congregation or not, and networking, a different thing, but all part of what could be an overall program of vocation. We talk about mentoring. I tried to bring in youth there, we didn't go there, but why are we not talking about vocation in confirmation? Or maybe you are. You know, why do we not bring into confirmation classes people who are doing different jobs and saying, would you please share with this class how being a nurse practitioner is part of your calling?
We've been trying to do that in our ninth grade confirmation. And one thing that was really well received is having a police officer come in last year and share. He was very candid. I was surprised how much he was willing to share. Like, there was an incident where he lost his weapon.
Wow.
And someone else was armed. And how, you know, how he sees himself as the community servant. It was very, I think it brings reality of faith and how he works that as a police officer.
How do the kids' faces look different when the police officer comes and talks to them as opposed to when they're
open? They're not talking to each other, they're looking at him. Whereas when I'm up there, it's like, okay, everybody, shut up.
You got free to be open in front of you and the pastor's writing on the chalkboard and the kids are going, yeah, you know.
Right. He's got all his gear on, though. You know, when he comes up there, he came fully armed.
Yeah. Have a guy bringing a rifle and you got attention. I mean, it's...
We did a vacation Bible school, and the one, and it kind of was field trip oriented. But and we live in a really, really small town, so this was doable. But in the evening, we had the volunteer fire department members from our congregation do a play of the three men in the fiery furnace.
Oh.
And then after they acted out the Bible story, then, you know, they got in their gear and they showed the kids the fire truck and they talked to them about safety, what would happen if there was a fire in their home, and how would the person who comes to rescue you look, and don't be afraid of them. And, you know, I'm sure that'll be memorable for them.
Absolutely. So we've got vocational programming in youth education or youth programming. You've got this in small group ministries. You've got it through education forums. I mean, pastors, take notes. You're not going to do any of this. Other people want to come in and do it for you. You don't come do this. Stuff in our newsletter. I know my mom does that at her church. Goes out and interviews people and writes up an article for them. Not them doing it all the time, but, you know, just so people get to know each other. Especially, I think, in our suburban and larger churches where we don't know each other well. I know that some of that can happen. Talk about surveys. What other areas of ministry? Dorothy?
Well, something that's going on this summer here that I think could easily be taken to a congregation is each Monday night is the Vespers centers around the blessing of a vocation. Mm-hmm. Like this last Monday night, it was a blessing of parents. It could be a ritual, you know, 2-3 times a year in the church.
You're ahead of me. Come back tomorrow. Tomorrow we're going to talk about the church's unique opportunity to bless, that is to bring God's energies into something, the blessing of our vocation. And tomorrow we'll talk about, there's a service actually for blessing the vocation of the Christian in the world. And could we use that in worship? We'll get there tomorrow. Yeah.
Something that kind of goes along with small groups, but I know as a teacher I wanted to start a prayer group, or I wanted someone to start a prayer group just to pray, and not getting into the complaining, which is so easy to do, and so that really has to be focused, that it's not a little Johnny did this, but that it's a prayer for these children, or a prayer for a teacher that might need it, or, you know, so I see, and maybe not all professions, but that was something that...
Allison, how would you see your congregation praying for you or the kids with whom you work? How would you see that happening? What forms? I mean, how are you going to get...
Locked by a small group?
Yeah, I think maybe a small group. Prayer requests are tough because sometimes that, if you have put them in the bulletin or in the newsletter, that you might not be able to use names. So I see it being a very personal thing.
A small... Yeah, you know... I want to underscore that, because I think, as I talk with people about this, it's the personal connection that we're looking for. Somebody who really understands, who really can share my passion, who can really help me through this. And when we want prayer, it's nice to have the congregation pray, please bless all of our teachers and their work in the schools. That's nice. Mm-hmm. But if our burden is for Susan and Jack, that's going to happen in a small group. Or maybe like prayer around the cross here at Holden, mm-hmm. Where there are people there,
for different vocations.
Yeah, people. You know, who come up and say, "For what can I pray with you?" Mm-hmm. You know, and that's personal. If you trust those folks.
I wanted to respond to you that I'm a teacher too, and I think this works really well for us. We have a teacher's prayer group that meets in a coffee shop in our town, so we're not in a church, and we're actually from different congregations. Mm-hmm. And very diverse congregations. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows that we're there every Wednesday morning from 7:30 to 8:30. Mm-hmm. And it's been a really nice witness in our community too, because people will come up and ask for prayer for different things, but we mainly pray for kids in our district, families in our district, mm-hmm. our administration, anything that's going on in our district, as well as our personal concerns. But it's been really an incredible blessing in our community, and also, for me personally, one of the best things that's come out of that is I'm a very liberal person. We have some very conservative people in that prayer group, and I used to not be able to say conservative and Christian together without kind of a shudder.
Yeah.
But it's really helped me to see people who are coming from a very honest place, mm-hmm. that have a very different viewpoint than I do, and still facing it in Christ. And that has been just eye-opening for me. And I think that each of us in our prayer group has been really blessed in different ways by doing that.
What part of the country do you live in?
I live in Northern California.
Mm-hmm. California. Those of us out here on the West Coast, I think, are much more used to ecumenical ventures of this, mm-hmm. sort, than those in the Midwest. The only people who are really threatened by this is your pastor, because they want the program to happen through our church. Mm-hmm. You as the priesthood of believers, that's self-confession, okay? You as the priesthood of believers, who are Christians out there on the lines, do it! Pray for each other, be with each other as the church Catholic. That's our language.
That was my thought. How did it get started in your church? Was that...
It wasn't in our church. It was the teachers in our school district that were Christian just kind of asked each other, what if we get together? And first it was in the school, and then we thought, let's do this in a more public arena, which has been a really good piece of it, that we're not just in a classroom where nobody sees us. We're at the place where parents will come up and say, I've been having this issue, would you pray for me? Or you know, other, and so that's been a key thing. It was doing it outside of the church, outside of the school, in a public arena, but it was just Christian teachers that came.
So you, there's not a breakfast component to what you do, and social component. It's you get together,
we're
right?
At a coffee shop, and after we're from several different schools, but in one district. So, I mean, people sometimes have a muffin and coffee because at a coffee shop, mm-hmm. and we pray for the coffee shop and the owners of the coffee shop and all that. But, you know, we usually have something because we're using their space. So.
Don't you just hate it? It just happened. It's just the church. We can't program this. We can't make it happen.
It's been incredible. A lot of positive things. And, you know, we've really kind of kept track over the years of, you know, answer to prayer and that kind of thing. And we just have seen a lot.
Well, I wrote prayer a different color because, you know, we don't want to leave that out. I think all of us in our hearts want people to pray for us and for the people that we're called to serve, and that God's will be summoned out through us for these people. And it can happen in worship, it can happen in our congregations, it can happen outside.
These are also public schools, you know, that can be any kind of group, and they're all Christian schools that we're, you know, I think it's nice that these are public school teachers, so you don't need to kind of get, you know, the separation of church and state and everything, but it doesn't need to be that way.
And also with that, last night's Vespers and the call to community and not so much me, and I realize that I also need people praying for me quite often. But when we're focusing, whether it's teaching, and I know we're getting on teaching, but whether it's focused, or a group of at Thrivent praying for their clients, or you know, the people you're networking with, it so takes the focus off of me, and all of a sudden we're praying for these people, and mm-hmm. it seems to help make us okay when we're praying for others. And
I would think to have you take the sermon, or what we used to call temple talk, you know, but a piece of the worship service where you actually have some time to give your witness and what your vocation is and where the concerns are our school district people, you know. Then when you get to the prayers of the church, it's got a little more meaning to it, huh? A little more depth. Mm-hmm. Mark?
I'm just trying to think about implementing something in the congregation I'm in. I don't have somebody from my congregation here, so if I was going to do something like this, I would have to take some kind of initiative. But I'm wondering, with the small group idea, I used to want to program things and systematize them, but I'm wondering if you could, in our place, to have adult education is a strong emphasis there, so you start with some basic adult education program, a class goes 4 to 6 weeks, maybe you develop it or use this book or something like that, and then out of that group, maybe there would be 6, 7, 8 people that would be willing to be a pilot small group and give them a basic task, like, you know, each week you do one person and just look at their vocation, and you'd come up with somewhat non-threatening questions. But that small group could be somewhat self-selected by their willingness to try it and become a pilot, and a lot of these other things could grow out of that then too, with that group willing. And you'd need a leader, though. My experience is, for anything to really take off, there has to be somebody who's willing to take a leadership role.
Okay, question. Who's going to fuel this ministry? Who's going to make it happen in your congregation?
Have you ever had the Alpha program? You get a lot of leadership out of it. We did.
And I'm just saying, from a practical standpoint as a pastor right now, I would have to have some mechanism to even identify who the leader is going to be.
One of them sitting right behind you. Would you please tell me why you are uniquely called to the vocation of starting such a ministry at this point?
An employee?
Absolutely. You were in the morning session. We were talking about this. You know, it's kind of like, right now I'm thinking about where I'm going vocationally and employment. That, doggone it, there you are, churches. Someone who's living it, who's called to it, who understands the issues, who unfortunately has some time to give to the church right now. You know, that's, you know, what I always do is go say, okay, council, we need to start this job. Who wants to lead this small group? They'll go. We're all too busy.
And I think the other way too is the education, finding someone. Would you write about your vocation?
Yeah. Well, so I would think maybe through that, those that come to a class are going to have some interest in the topic. And so hopefully out of that, somebody might identify. I mean, if the fact is, in the congregation I'm dealing with, this is sad, but there may be people who are unemployed, I don't even know it.
you know, I'm dealing with the size of congregation that I don't know that, and so a class might be a non-threatening way of finding that out.
But Mark, we got a Dorothy in our congregation. I know we do. Mm-hmm. Go to the quilting circle. I mean, there are people who know a lot more than we pastors know about what's going on with our people in the congregation, to our shame, yeah. Right? You know, what we need to do is to learn the right questions to ask. The question is, you know,
The approach is really important, too, because the title in the bulletin for this group and the approach that you take is going to be everything. Mm-hmm. If you don't get that down, it's just going to die right before it even begins.
I'll tell you something you all know anyway. Announcements in the bulletin and newsletter aren't going to work.
Right.
You just find someone who's got that call and say, go. They'll find the people, they'll build the group. Especially if you say it doesn't have to be all church people. Oh, really? You mean I could invite my friend? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we won't even call it evangelism. We'll just let you do it. You know, so, yeah, I appreciate your comment. I mean, you know, who's going to take initiative for this ministry in your congregation? And who's going to do the educating or the small group leadership? That's a real question. Right? We've got to do that piece of programming, the who's and the hows and how much it's going to cost.
Don't you? And we have a very diverse congregation because we live in a suburban area without anyone. There's no town. Mm-hmm. There's no one school district. Our kids go to five different school districts.
Yeah.
It's you don't have a town square, and you don't have a city, a community, and everyone works in different places. And the only common denominator we have probably is the church. But if you're going to, I think you have to systemize, Pastor said, you have to systemize if you're doing it. You have to look at what kind of your congregation is first. If you're in a small town, it's a whole different thing than being in a diverse suburban community.
Yep.
And if you're in a diverse suburban community, you may not have but one person that lives in, with this faction of the church, but you're leaving three quarters of the church out. If you let it become one person personalizes, they'll get all their friends.
Yeah. Yep.
But they won't get the other friends when you have three services and some never see each other. So you have to have some kind of a system. Or a model that's open to everyone.
Well, it's a catch-22 thing, I think, with small group ministries. And there are people here who know more about small group ministry than I do. But when you try to systematize small group ministry and get everyone in the congregation into a small group, you're guaranteed to fail. Because there's some people that just don't function that way. They don't want to be in a small group. If, on the other hand, it becomes a clique, you'll also fail. You know, so you got to find. I would guess in a suburban community, and I don't pastor in one, but I would guess in a suburban community, you've got two common denominators, the church and isolation. I would guess most of us in suburban communities who live here but work there, my kids go to school there, and we do this, are feeling very disconnected from what I would consider healthy community, you know, and it's part of suburbia. And I think almost more in suburban areas, you've got to find a way to help people connect and trust and build some connections, which is hard because they're going to move in 3 years, right? I could be wrong about that, but okay, we got education, we've got small groups, we've got prayer, we've got mentoring, we've got different ways to bring this into worship. How are we doing on time here?
I'm not going to be here tomorrow, so I just had to...
Let it all out then.
Right, it's the Ministry in Daily Life that came out in one of their ideas, but on Labor Day weekend, it's not a high weekend, but we had people bring in a tool of their trade and did the little Luther quote about the tools of the trade and had them bring it up in an offering procession. Yeah. And lay them all out, and you've got to put tarps in case somebody wants to bring like a chainsaw or something, you know, and then invite people to, you know, to mill around and look at the tools of our trade and all the varied ways that we serve God. And, you know, the first year it was kind of like, oh, that's so weird. And the second year people were trying to outdo one another, you know, the coolest thing they could bring.
And now that's wonderful. That is the sort of creative idea to bring visually and sacramentally into worship what we do. Now give me 11 more such ideas that we do the first Sunday of each month.
And bless them.
Yeah, and you know, how many variations on this? So that the recognition and conversation about your ministries doesn't become a once a year thing only. but becomes the warp and woof of the whole life of the congregation.
Well, then here's another idea, since I'm letting it all out. One small group idea, you know, would be to gather a group around the text for the day, and then I realize this is like sort of pastor-centered, but the group's task is to look at the text and see where that issue or story is happening today in the community or in a workplace or in their lives, and then the pastor has to go and go to that spot and preach the story of the sermon from someplace in their community.
Yeah, why don't we oversee to our pastors, Pastor, we would like you to preach on this Sunday. Mm-hmm. You ever done that for your pastor? I'll tell you, as a pastor, I'd be thrilled to death. You mean you actually want me to shape my sermon so that you'll listen to it? You know, that would be a wonderful thing in many ways. But let's put the pastor back in the mix. I don't want to suggest the pastor's got no role in any of this. Where's your pastor's unique role in the ministry of this sort, where we're focusing on the vocation of your daily lives? What's your pastor's role in that ministry? I mean, we don't want the pastor leading all the small groups. I don't want the pastor doing all the forums. You know, I don't want the pastor leading all the prayer groups. But where do you want your pastor involved in this?
He needs to be aware of
and worship
of what's going on and be an overseer type person so that it doesn't get off track too far.
Yeah,
too far from the church.
I think out of courtesy to your pastor, because the reality of most of our churches is we let the pastors be largely in charge of many things.
And he can mentor a seminarian.
Sure. And I don't think your pastor should be out of the loop. You know, talk to your pastor about this ministry if you want to get it started. And the pastor might have some mentoring roles, especially for seminarians, you know. But, you know, given that, somebody said,
worship.
What do you want your pastor to be doing in worship?
Well, it could be included in the prayers, or it could be...
You said...
The word of encouragement.
The honoring part that you mentioned before, that's a key part to helping people in their vocation.
Something, well, let me ask you. Are there some things that can really only happen in the worship setting that aren't really going to happen anywhere else?
Yes.
Is that, don't we gather for a reason? Okay. I mean, and I...
Thank and praise God for all of it.
Yeah, there's a time to praise God, you know, and your music team and your pastor at your church are probably responsible for shaping that time of praise. All we're trying to do is point some of that towards, more directly towards our vocations, right? Your pastor, through the way she or he speaks about things, will honor or not honor vocations. I was touched by Vespers Monday, and the strong sense of honoring parents. That was said so well. You know, it just reached into your heart, and this is what we should be. You know, I could not, as a parent, leave that Vesper service and not felt like God had touched me as a parent. That's what I want out of my pastor and my worship. You know, some of that. Prayer. There are prayers of the church. There are prayers of the church, but there's lots of ways to do that. Holden's always wonderful for 101 ways to do worship differently. And to bring people into prayer differently. But there are ways to do that. What else do you want your pastor to do?
Keep us centered on God.
Okay. Your pastor has the vocational call of keeping the word out there, right?
Right. Helping make the intersection.
Yeah. Okay. Intersection's a nice word. I struggle as a pastor, and I think most pastors probably do, but we really would like to speak the gospel into your context. We really would like to do that. But lots of things can get in the way. What could be my skills? But one of them can also be whether I actually know your context or not. And I can't know your context unless you're telling me. Now, you said whining. I don't want people to come whining me all the time about why, you know. But part of that's my responsibility to be in the places that you do ministry. I think you were mentioning that, you know, to actually be in the place where you do ministry so I can learn about your ministry. Part of that is really, really orienting my thought as a clergy person that God's work happens through more than me. And I got to tell you, I'm Roman Catholic enough, pre-Reformation enough, that I still have troubles with that, you know. The real God work happens at Bible study, and why aren't they there, doggone it? You know, so We're going to have to put that intersection between that, and that's the pastor. Your pastor has a unique calling and a unique responsibility to help bring you to that intersection.
Sometimes maybe even such simple things as using words that convey the meaning. You know, we have like the time and talent sheets, and the only things we list are jobs in the church, you know, be usher, Sunday school teacher, things like that. Sometimes just by using different words, open it up to show that it isn't only the tasks that are done right in church.
Well, what does it do to somebody when they have to apologize to their pastor that they can't teach Sunday school because they're too busy parenting? You know, pastor, I'm working two jobs, and I'm really sorry I can't do this. Why should they feel guilty for being full-time in the ministry of God out in the world, for heaven's sakes? You know, I say bless you. Of course, we had no Sunday school, but I say bless you, you know. I mean, that's hard. How about confession? Is there any role for confession in this vocation-centered ministry? You ever feel like you can't do your job? You can't fulfill your vocation? It ain't working? What's confession for? Confession in the Lutheran sense is not for saying, gee, I smoked this week, I'm sorry. Okay, read your confession. I confess that I'm in bondage to sin. I cannot fix the world through my vocation. I'm trying, it's not working. Lord, it's messed up. I'm a doctor, and this person's got cancer, and I can't fix it. And what does that do to your soul? My Luther quote. Be strong in the word and live your vocation, you'll find out it doesn't work. Is there a place for confession and absolution in that? I think so. I would like to think so as a pastor. You know, problem is we've stopped doing it in the Lutheran church. By which I mean specific confession, where you can bring your pains before the Lord. Read this paragraph, we're done. Amen. You know? There's a place for that. But either you need to bring to page 56 in the Green Hymnal that specificity, or else we need to go back to smaller, more trusting connections where we can talk more. And the pastor, while officially responsible for confession and absolution, doesn't have to be alone to do that. That can happen in lots of ways in small groups, too. How about the sacrament? Do they in your church bring the bread and the wine up to the altar with the offering?
No.
Why? I don't know. Well, they should. Why don't they? Or why would you? What's the symbolism of bringing bread and wine up to the altar midway through the service after the sermon, just before you're going to celebrate the feast? What's the symbolism?
The gifts.
A gift of who? Us. Lord, I'm a farmer. You bless my vocation. Here's what I do. I give it to you. And it's symbolic of all of our vocations and all of our ministries. What does God do with it in return?
Shares.
Blesses it in your
back. It's when announcements ought to be made, too.
Announcements? Okay.
Announcements ought to be made.
Why, right?
At offering time. Well, instead of at the opening of the service.
Okay.
Because that's in part, the giving of ourselves basically into the ministry of the church. And that's our offering, part of our offering time, offering of our time and talents.
In our education piece, we need to talk about that. That your vocations are so valued that in the middle of the service, after you've heard the word, we receive an offering. We're not just trying to float the budget. We are taking what you give from your vocations, grain, grapes, chainsaws, bring them up and put them on the altar right there, okay? Okay? We bring these things forward so that God will bless them and feed us and send us back out to do our ministries. We need some education about that, huh? And we also want to bring together our prayer concerns at that time and all sorts of things. If there are special services, like a baptism, it fits right in that same spot, right? That's what we do all our vocational stuff. Well, not all, that's what we do a lot of our vocational stuff. This is what we bring, and it's always the same.
God receives, blesses, and turns us back out. Well, okay, we need to quit, but before we do, two things. One, next class, which is tomorrow at 10:45 in the morning here, if you're interested, we're going to finish the process we started today, but this is what we're going to do. We're going to look at the service of affirmation of vocation of the Christian in the world. It's a service in your pastor's occasional service hymn book. And I want to look at that service together. We're going to walk through it. I want to look at that service together and ask if it might not be a part of an overall ministry of vocational affirmation in your congregation. We need a lot more than that service, but I want to look at that service specifically just because it brings in what we're talking about and symbolizes it in worship for us in an interesting way. I want to ask about that. So we'll do that tomorrow. We'll review a little bit to do that. I also have a question, a tough one, you need to decide about tomorrow. As we are blessing vocations in our congregation, are we going to bless just any vocation?
No.
We're going to talk about that tomorrow. I mean, say you do all this. Say you've got classes to talk about what people do, and you've got support groups for people and what they're doing in their daily life. And say you get people from outside the congregation participating in this, and all of a sudden somebody shows up and says, you know what? I run the casino that just moved into your town. And I would like to have my vocation blessed. Can I talk about what I do and why I think you're going to do that? I mean, maybe that's not the one that's going to grill your liver, but...
How about the doctor that performs abortions?
All right, so you've got a doctor who's runs a clinic where they do abortions, and the doctor says, you know, women, if I weren't doing these abortions, these women would be dying on the streets and bleeding all over the place, and this is a good thing I'm doing God's will, and half of your congregation says, oh yeah? Not in my town, you're not. Okay. Say that doctor's part of a small group, and you say to people, we're going to bless vocations next week. Who wants to be part of it? They say, he says, I do. You know, my question is, when the church does this function, who's responsible not only for defining what a vocation is, but whether or not we're going to affirm that one? Because if you're going to do this, people, you're really going to open up your church to what people are doing in their lives, you're going to find out they're not all doing the things that you think they ought to be doing. But they still are feeling God's call there, and now you're going to have to talk about that. So you got two choices. You think about it, you talk about it, or you decide that you're just going to do strawberry shortcake festivals and hear pastor sermons. Okay, so tomorrow we're going to look at that service and we're going to ask about which vocations, how we're going to determine if we're going to bless all vocations or not. And that's very important to me, what you say tomorrow, because you're going to be setting a precedent for next week's discussion, which has to do with blessing other sorts of vocations. All right. I said two things. That was one of them. And I forgot what the other one is, so thank you very much.